Well, who can't relate to those fears, right? Well, good morning. My name is Eric. I'm the Director of Community Life here at Crosspoint. The question I heard about 10 years ago is this: what would you do if you weren't afraid? Now, if you've read the book, Who Moved My Cheese, you know that's a famous phrase from that book, but I had never read that book. Actually, the context in which I heard this question was I was speaking to a coworker of mine at the time, and she was up for this job promotion. And this job promotion would mean moving across the country and all the different things that go with that, of uprooting a family and new schools and new jobs. And what if the job doesn't work out? And here we moved across the country, and finally her husband stopped her and said to her, "What would you do if you weren't afraid?" And it was an interesting question for me to hear, because when I think of fears, I think of things that maybe you guys think of. Things like phobias, like I'm afraid of public speaking, or I'm afraid of heights, or I'm afraid of spiders, or I'm afraid of clowns, or maybe even afraid of carnies, right? These are legit fears, but there are different fears that we have that keep us from pursuing all that God has for us. Those fears that just hold us back, those fears that say you'll never change, why bother? Why even try? Those types of fears. And I'm hoping today will be a watershed day for each and every one of us, where we're able to begin slaying the giant of fear in our lives, where we no longer allow fear to hold us back. As I meet with people throughout the course of the week, whether it's here through Crosspoint or in the counseling center that I work at, I'd say if there is an undercurrent, a root to most people's problems, or one of the biggest, is they allow fear to challenge them, to dictate their life. And regretfully, I can look at my own life and I can see how fear has played a huge role in impacting my life in a not so positive way. Fear is more prevalent in our world and in our lives than we even realize. But see, God's not surprised by this whatsoever. In fact, one of the most repeated commandments really throughout the course of the Bible is to fear not. In fact, it's been said that fear not, or some sort of derivative of fear not, do not be afraid or be not afraid, is in 366 verses of the Bible. It's like there's a different fear not verse for every day of the year for us, including leap year, since there's 366 of them. And now I'm going to read all 366 of those verses. Strap yourselves in. I hope you went to the bathroom before the service, because this is going to take about 5 hours. I'm just kidding. But it's almost as if God knew that fear would be this huge giant that we're going to have to slay. That's why it's addressed so much in the Bible. Now, when we think about fear and we think about slaying giants, then the Bible story that comes to mind, or the story that maybe even comes to mind that you don't always necessarily connect with the Bible, is the story of David and Goliath. The story of David and Goliath is the basis for Louis Giglio's book called Goliath Must Fall, which is the basis for this series. Now, you probably know the gist of the story, so I won't get too much into it, but you had the Israelites on one side and you had the Philistines on one side, and they're at war, and essentially they were in a standstill. And so they got to this place that neither army could really move forward without exposing themselves and opening themselves up to losing. And so it was somewhat customary during that time, then each side would send their best warrior, and they would just kind of duke it out mano a mano, winner take all. Now, on the Philistine side, they had a guy by the name of Goliath, who is described as being over 9 feet tall. He definitely would be drafted in this coming NBA draft if he was eligible, right? So we had Goliath 9 feet tall. He was described as a champion warrior. And then on the other side, we had David. We had David, who was a shepherd boy. But before it even came to David, the Israelites really had nobody that was volunteering to kind of go against Goliath. And so for 40 days, Goliath would come out, they say twice a day, he would taunt the Israelites. And the Israelites just kind of stood back and they were afraid. They were paralyzed by fear, much in the same way that we can be paralyzed by fear. You know, when we hear those voices say that you can't do it, you'll never get past this. Why even bother? Why even try? You're just going to fall. You're just going to fail. See, fear demoralizes us. Fear steals from us. Fear deceives us. But fear does not come from God. As a matter of fact, we're told this in 2 Timothy, for God has not given us a spirit of fear or timidity, but power, love, and self-discipline. That's what God gives us. God doesn't want us to fear. So how do we combat fear? Well, again, we go back to this story. So again, on one side we have Goliath, the 9-foot warrior, over 9 feet. He had a sword, and he had a spear, and he had a javelin, and he also may have had a shot put. And if it was during the winter, he would have a curling stone. So he had that. And then he wore a bunch of armor too. David, of course, is a teenager. He's a shepherd. He's not a warrior. What did David have? He had a slingshot and 5 stones. Doesn't seem like a fair fight, does it? You ever hear that phrase? He brought a knife to a gunfight. You don't want to be the guy bringing a knife to a gunfight. Kind of reminds me of this iconic scene from the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark. So I like that scene probably more than I should. But when we look at David and Goliath, we do not see a very fair fight. David doesn't seem to stand a chance, but we know the story, right? David took a slingshot and with 1 stone, slung it right into the forehead of Goliath, instantly killing him. He falls to the ground, and then for good measure, David takes Goliath's sword, cuts off the head of the giant, pulls it up, holds it out. Now, if we saw that in a movie, well, some of you might not be doing this, but there'd be people like jumping out of their seats cheering, right? Because that's pretty bad. That's pretty tough. But see, the secret to David being able to defeat Goliath had nothing to do with the fact that he had a sword or didn't have a sword, that he had a spear or didn't have a spear. It wasn't even in the fact that he had a slingshot or didn't have a slingshot. See, the strength behind David being able to defeat Goliath was in the fact that he had faith. This is what David says. He says, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty." He wasn't sitting there saying, "You come at me with sword, spear, javelin, and I come at you with a slingshot. And oh yeah, by the way, I'm going to grab me a sword and spear just to have as a backup. Maybe I'll get my brothers to kind of back me up in case things go south." No, David was stating right there where his strength comes from, and that's from God. He's stating that his weapon was his faith in God. And that really takes trust. That really takes trust. See, he trusted God, but listen to the confidence in which David speaks. Now, keep in mind, he is saying this before he takes on Goliath. He says, "This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. Today, listen to this, I will give the carcass of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword, it is not by spear that the Lord saves. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you all into our hands." He said that before. He said that to Goliath before he took him down. It's like David was calling his shot here. He's saying, "Goliath, not only am I going to defeat you, but I'm going to tell you how I'm going to defeat you, and there's nothing you can do about that." David was trash talking in the name of the Lord is what he was doing. And you don't hear that often. But really what this shows you is that the antidote for fear is faith. And faith is hard, right? Like it would be so much easier to apply for that job if we knew we were going to get it. It'd be so much easier for you to give your money if you knew I'm not going to have an unexpected car repair that's going to come up this year where I'm going to go, "Oh, I could have used that money." See, in order to get past fear, we have to trust God, which is easier said than done. So how do we have less fear and more faith in our lives? Well, first, we need to identify what our fear is. Louis Giglio puts it this way. He says, we need to name what is keeping us up at night. See, it's not enough to say that I deal with a lot of anxiety or I worry a lot. We have to name that culprit. We have to admit what that thing is or what that person is or who that person is or the circumstance that is keeping us up. See, there's a source behind our fear. And once we're able to identify what that fear is in our life, then we do this. We give that to God. One of my favorite verses that I feel like has really resonated in my life and really come to the surface over the last year is 1 Peter 5:7, which says, give all your worries and cares to God. Give all your worries and cares to God. We take whatever it is that is weighing on our shoulders and we give that to God. Now, some of you may struggle with this idea because you may not have realized that we can do this, that God's okay with us doing that. Or maybe for you, you always take the approach of, other people have much bigger problems than me, right? I'm not going to bother anyone, much less God, with my problems. But I love what that verse in 1 Peter 5:7 goes on to say. Give all your worries and cares to God, for he cares about you. God cares about you. You're not a burden. You're not inconveniencing God with your fears. We need to not minimize our fears, but rather we need to maximize our view of God and what he's able to do. And what's God able to do? Well, God is bigger than your fears. And that's the second point when it comes to how we incorporate more faith into our life and less fear. That God is bigger than our fears. But as human beings, we often think, well, if I can't fix it, if I can't figure it out, if I can't overcome it, then there's no hope. But really what you're saying there is, God, this thing that I'm dealing with, this struggle that I have, this fear that I have, it's too big for you, which is impossible. Nothing is too big for God. There's no fear big enough that God cannot handle. But this is where faith comes in. We not only give our worries and fears to God, but we trust God that he can take them and he can remove them from our lives, that he can handle them. David, he wrote this in Psalms. He says, when I am afraid, I put my trust in you. See, trust is an all-in proposition. You can't have a little bit of trust, right? But we do this with our faith all the time, right? We say, God, I trust you with all of my heart. God, I have faith in you. Well, except when it comes to my finances. I need to figure those out, right? God, I totally have faith in you. I trust in you. I have all my trust in you. Except when it comes to my kids. I have to bubble wrap them. I have to chart out their path for them because, God, I don't think you can handle that. God, I trust you with all my life. Except with my struggle. Except with my sin. I have to handle that. Years ago, we were selling a home, and we were presented an offer from our agent that we just didn't think was good, right? We almost got the feeling that our agent was just basically saying, just take it, kind of get done with it, almost like he didn't want to deal with us anymore and just kind of move on to bigger and better things. But we didn't feel good or right about the offer, and yet fear crept in because there was that fear that said, if we don't take this offer, then what if our house sits on the market for a while? What if we're not able to sell our house for a while? Or what if subsequent offers all come in and they're much lower? And I'll never forget, I felt like God just hit me and struck me with this, where I basically said to myself, God, I say I trust you. I say I trust you with all my heart. But here it is, my most valuable earthly possession and asset, the thing that has the most greatest monetary value, I don't trust you with it. And we do this all the time. We have a hard time trusting God with all that we have. We sometimes feel like I have to control this. But let me tell you this, there's something very freeing, something extremely freeing by saying, God, I'm taking all of this and I'm giving it to you. It's like saying, Jesus, take the wheel. And now I'm going to sing some Carrie Underwood for you. How many of you are afraid of that? But see, this leads to the third thing that we know about faith and our fears. The more we know God, the more we trust him. I'm guessing the people in your life you trust the most are people that you know well. Rarely do we have these scenarios where you come home and say, hey, honey, so I was hanging outside this bar, and I met this fellow by the name of Cobra, and he's selling laptops out of his trunk, and I thought it would be a good idea for me to have him babysit the kids for the weekend. Sound cool? Right? Like, we don't say this. We don't do this. But you know what? We only trust someone to the extent in which we know them. And the challenge for many of us when it comes to being able to trust God is we don't really know who God is. We don't really know him. We don't know his character. So we have a hard time putting our faith in him. In the book of Jeremiah, we're told this, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all of your heart. Another way we could say that is that you will seek me and know me when you seek me with all of your heart. See, we have to understand who God is. It's a relationship. We have to grow that relationship by seeking him. So it is reading the Bible and understanding it. It is praying and communicating with God. It is doing things like coming to church. Because if we don't really seek him, if we don't really seek to know what God is all about and really who his true character is, then we start basing that relationship and our knowledge and even our trust and faith in God based on what other people have told us or what I think or what I feel God would do, right? And that can be a dangerous proposition where it's more about, well, let me just Google that or let me cherry pick a Bible verse that I feel like it meets that. And that can be dangerous. Like, you could say, well, there's nothing in the Bible that says I can't text and drive, so I'm just going to have at it, right? There is no verse in the Bible, by the way, that says you can't text and drive. So, but the point is that we have to get to know God for ourselves. The more we know God, the more we'll trust him. I tell people all the time that trusting God is never easy, but it does get easier the more that we do that. And we see this play out with David. You see, one of the reasons why David was able to take on Goliath is because he saw how God had seen him through some pretty tough things in the past. See, as a shepherd, believe it or not, he had to take on some pretty vicious animals in order to protect them. When David is going to King Saul, essentially pleading his case as to why he should be the person to take on Goliath, this is what he says. He says, your servant, meaning him, has killed both the lion and the bear, this uncircumcised Philistine, which I'm not sure why he has to go to that, but he does, right? This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. See, he knew that he had gone through these circumstances before. God had saw him through and he could trust God. So he was able to take on Goliath. My wife, Julie, recently quit her full-time job. We both felt like she was being called to some more ministry opportunities. Ministry opportunities that don't have any type of paycheck attached to them. And what she was giving up was a job that had a paycheck attached to him and, oh, some insurance benefits attached to it. And when people ask, well, how are you guys able to do that? I simply reply that we are independently wealthy and we have more money than we know what to do with. Yes, that's how you do it. That's where our faith comes from. No, it's because in the past we've been able to trust God. It's not that we haven't felt that pinch. It's not that we haven't felt worry creep in from time to time or there's concerns. But because we've seen God see us through in the past, it became easier to do it. It didn't mean it was easy. It just means it becomes easier the more that we do that. And we see that with David. Just like David had the experience of God seeing him take on lions and bears, taking on Goliath maybe didn't seem as daunting as it would for most of us. And as I can say that for my wife and I, as we've gone through this latest step of faith, if you will, our faith has grown. Because faith is like this muscle that has to grow, that we have to work it in order for it to grow. Now, this isn't always the case for me. I wish I could say that my life was always more about having faith and trust in God rather than by fear. On this Father's Day, maybe you recount some wonderful words of wisdom from your dad. You know, some of us have those dads that, my dad always told me this. Or maybe for you as your mom. Mom always said, right? And it's usually some nugget of wisdom that relates back to working hard or how we treat people, right? I'm not sure if my kids will have anything like, my dad always said this, or They always tell me this. They may say things like, my dad quoted the movie Anchorman a lot. Does that count for anything? But I feel like one thing that I feel like if I try to instill in my kids is to not let fear lead their life, to not let fear dictate their life, not let fear hold them back. My son was in junior high. He tried out for the seventh grade basketball team, along with 129 other seventh graders. This is Fishers, Indiana, right, in a nutshell, right? 129 kids. So he didn't make the team, which was a bummer. Next year, the eighth grade tryouts come around, and he wants to try out for the team again, sort of. Like, who doesn't want to be on the team? We all want to be on the team, I think, right? But he kind of surmised, well, they're just going to take the same players they took last year, which is logical, right? It seemed logical. But digging down, there was also an admission of, if I try out again and I don't make it, then I get cut again. And that hurts. But then we also miss out when we don't try out on potentially something great. So then I gave something that I have now referred to as the couch speech. And anybody who's probably ever sat with me within a counseling room has probably heard some sort of variation of what is known as the couch speech. And I said to my son, who was sitting on the couch, and he probably doesn't remember this, so I'm going to make him listen to the podcast over and over and over. So years from now, I'll say, I don't remember a whole lot what my dad said to me personally, but he made me listen to a podcast of him several times. But what I said to him was, Evan, you can sit on this couch and always wonder if you could have made the team, or you can get off the couch and you can try out, and maybe you'll make the team. The worst thing that can happen is you end up back here on the couch. But the only way you'll make the team, there's only one way in which you make the team, and that is to risk being cut. But even if you end up back here on the couch, it's a different feeling. While it still might sting not to make the team, there's no regrets related to, I wonder if I could have made the team, or if I made the team, how cool would that have been? To further illustrate this point, we go to Rocky Balboa, naturally. And this is a scene from Rocky III, my favorite of the Rocky movies, where Rocky and his wife Adrienne are having a very passionate discussion related back to a Goliath that Rocky is needing to slay. Check this out.
What's the truth?
I'm afraid, all right? You want to hear me say it? You want to break me down? All right, I'm afraid. For the first time in my life, I'm afraid.
I'm afraid, too. There's nothing wrong with being afraid.
There is. For me, there is.
Why, you're human, aren't you?
Look, I don't know what I am. All I know is I'm a liar. And because of that, Mickey ain't here no more.
You didn't push him into anything. He was a grown man, and he did what he had to do. And you have no right to feel guilty for what happened. You don't. You were a champion, and you did what you were expected to do. And you did what I and everybody else thought you should do. And you want to tell me that those fights weren't real, that you were carried? Well, I don't believe it. It doesn't matter what I believe, because you're the one that's got to carry that fear around inside you. Afraid that everybody's going to take things away. Afraid you're going to be remembered as a coward. That you're not a man anymore. Well, none of it's true. But it doesn't matter if I tell you. It doesn't matter because you're the one that's got to settle it. Get rid of it. Because when all the smoke has cleared and everyone's through chanting your name, it's just going to be us. And you can't live like this. We can't live like this. It's gonna bother you for the rest of your life. Look what it's doing to you now. Paula thinks you can do it. So do I. But you gotta wanna do it for the right reasons. Not for the guilt over Mickey. Not for the people. Not for the title. Not for money or me. But for you. Just you. Just you alone.
And if I lose?
And you lose. At least you lose with no excuses. No fear. And I know you can live with that.
Really, what she's saying there is that we generally can live with failing when we know that we've tried. But allowing fear to dictate what we do or we don't do oftentimes leads to regret. And regrets are hard to live with. Regrets haunt us. any adult in this room will tell you that they probably have several regrets, several things that they look back and they wish they could change, and I'm going to guess many of those regrets involve fear. You see, our biggest regrets often come from our biggest fears. Some things we did because of fear. Everybody else was doing it. I was afraid to say no. Then there's other things in life that we have that we regret that we didn't do. I should have called them. I should have tried that. Really, the list can go on and on. If you've been here at Crosspoint over the last month or so, during my little horse and pony show announcements that I do from time to time, you heard me joke about being on the Crosspoint soccer team. And this may come as a shock to you. I often hide some of my fears and insecurities in humor, or at least my attempts at humor. But playing on the soccer team for Crosspoint was a big deal for me. You see, when I was a kid, I played a lot of soccer, and I was pretty good at soccer. When people would ask me about sports, they'd say, "What's your favorite sport?" I said, "Well, my favorite sport's basketball, but the sport that I'm best at is soccer." And so I did really well at soccer. I played soccer in high school. I ended up quitting the team while in high school. That's a part of the story that I generally don't like to share with people. You know, I played soccer in high school, but I generally don't tell people that I quit the team. And I wish I had a great reason as to why I quit the team, like I had some sort of ankle injury or debilitating knee injury that prevented me from playing. But I really don't have a reason. And if I were to look back as to why I quit the team, it was fear. Fear of not being maybe as good as other people. Fear of not playing as much. Fear of maybe looking stupid if I wasn't that good. I would have a chance, and it would be one of the biggest regrets of my life, really, when I look back at of quitting that team. And I would have a chance later to redeem myself. In college, they found out that even though I didn't play 4 years of high school soccer, they still asked me to play, try out for the team, and I, of course, said no, because fear came creeping back of, what if you're not as good as the other people? What if you make a fool out of yourself trying out? What if you get cut? These are probably all the same things my son felt when he was thinking about trying out for the eighth grade team. And this is why I'm so passionate about instilling this into my kids, is because fear will rob us, fear will steal from us, and we will fail, and we'll be told no, and we'll even be cut sometime, but there's nothing like the sting of regret, the feeling of what might have been. Now, I thought of every excuse in the book as to why I couldn't play or shouldn't play on the Crosspoint soccer team. I'm too old. It's been a long time since I've played. What if I make a fool out of myself? What if I die on the field? Somewhat legit there. But these are all fears. But I signed up. And even after I signed up, in my mind, I started going through all the different caveats of, well, I'll only play like if you don't have enough people, right? If you need someone to stand on the field, I'll be that guy. But I signed up. So before you know it, I'm heading off to Dick's Sporting Goods to buy me some soccer cleats. Now, what I'm going to tell you here, folks, is you're either going to relate to some of the insanity of my train of thought, or you're just going to think I'm plain insane. So I go to Dick's Sporting Goods, and immediately I become self-conscious that I'm a grown man walking in to buy soccer cleats. Now, my guess is that the clerks at Dick's Sporting Goods do not give a rip as to what I'm buying, but fear is not rational. So I got in there and got out of there as quickly as possible with soccer cleats, only to come home and find out when I want to put on the shoes and try them on at home, because I didn't try them on there, they said football on there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I bought football cleats. This is soccer. Now, you, as a normal, rational human being, might go, Eric, aren't cleats cleats? And I'm like, no, these are the wrong cleats. I can't show up with the wrong cleats. People think I'm stupid if I show up with the wrong cleats. And all I can remember is back in high school when we played soccer, before the game, we'd always have to line up in the center line, and we'd have to show the referee our cleats to make sure our cleats were legal. And now I'm like, I can't show up with the wrong kinds of cleats. So I went back to Dick's Sporting Goods to get me some cleats. Now, on the way over there, another fear popped into my mind. And I wish these were, I was making these up, but these were legit fears I was feeling. I'm like, what kind of socks do I wear? I knew kind of what socks I wore back when I played high school soccer, but what kind of socks? Because I don't want to look stupid wearing the wrong kind of socks out there. So fortunately, on the way to Dick's Sporting Goods, there was a soccer league that was playing off one of the roads I was driving, and I looked, and I'm like, okay, they're wearing black socks. They come up to about here. That's the kind of socks that I need to get. And then I'm like, oh, wait a second. These are junior high girls. I might not be able to pull off that look. I kid you not, I ended up buying three different pairs of socks just so I would be covered because I didn't want to look stupid having the wrong kinds of socks there. I wish this was the end of my stupidity. But I get home. Now it's 45 minutes before the game, and I realize I have not kicked a soccer ball in a long, long time. And I thought, I do not want the first time I'm kicking a soccer ball to be on the field of play today. So I thought, well, I'll go out to the backyard. Now, this is a time when I wish my family was home, but they weren't. I was home all by myself. So now I'm self-conscious because I'm a grown man going out to my backyard to kick a soccer ball all by myself. And I thought, if my son was here, like, we could kick the soccer ball back and forth, and the neighbors would think, isn't that a sweet moment? Father and son having this sweet moment kicking a soccer ball back and forth. Instead, I was the 40-something-year-old man kicking a soccer ball in my yard all by myself. So now I'm driving over to the game, and I'm praying, like, God, maybe the game will get canceled. Maybe there'll be a tornado. Maybe I'll get into a car accident and I can't play. I was at the point of wishing for a car accident for myself so I could get out of playing. And then I thought, okay, God, help me just not to make a fool out of myself. And finally, I got to a place where you probably were at moments ago of going, this is a ridiculous train of thought. And so finally, I just prayed this. God, help me to have fun today. Help me not to worry about what other people think. Don't let fear rob me of what could be a good time today. 2 weeks ago today, I played in my first soccer game in nearly 30 years. I didn't suck. I was the oldest person out there. There were some people, I'd say a vast majority of them, were not born the last time I played soccer. But I didn't die either, right? And know what the cool thing is? I had fun. I had a lot of fun. And all I kept thinking was, I could have missed it. I could have missed it if I let stupid fear get in the way of robbing me again. See, playing in that soccer game was representative of an area of my life that fear robbed me of. I essentially, when it came to soccer in my life, had been sitting on the couch for 30 years, or close to 30 years. You can do math calculations in your mind to figure out how old I am. I realized, too, that I can tell my kids all I want to about not being afraid or letting fear get in the way, but it's far more impactful for me to live that, for them to see that from me. See, fear robs us of the best that God has waiting for us. In John 10:10, it says this, the thief's purpose is to steal, kill, and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. See, the thief is the enemy. It's the devil. And one of his biggest tools is fear, because if he can get you to doubt yourself, if he can get you to worry, if he can get you to be fearful, then you're just going to stay right where you're at. But God says, this is what I have for you. His purpose is to give you a rich and satisfying life. God's purpose is to give you, not make you rich, but to give you a rich and satisfying life. And that, my friends, is what's on the other side of fear, is a rich and satisfying life. See, the world from time to time is going to shut doors on you. Don't shut them on yourself. Because there's going to be times where you don't get the job, and there's going to be times you're going to be cut from the team. And there's going to be even times when the girl that you ask out says no. Don't let the giant of fear tell you why bother or why even try. See, the worst case scenario is that you are back on the couch, but even then, that will feel different because you'll be on a couch without regrets. A couch without regrets, by the way, is different than a throne of lies. It's an elf quote. Even better for you, it's not all Anchorman, it's a myriad of Will Ferrell movies that I quote. Even better though, You might not be sitting on the couch at all. This is the good stuff. You might be, because that thing that you thought, that fear said was impossible, is now possible. What if on the other side of fear was something great? What if on the other side of fear was something amazing and better than you ever dreamed of? I love what pastor and speaker Craig Groeschel says. He says, the path to your greatest potential is often straight through your greatest fear. Isn't that a great quote? The path to your greatest potential is often through your greatest fear. Today, you'll have an opportunity to identify some areas of growth and next steps in your life, and I encourage you to look at that back of that connection card. But as we wrap up, we come back to the question, so what would you do if you weren't afraid? What would you do if you weren't afraid? Would you go out for the team? Would you go on that mission trip? Would you volunteer, maybe to play in the band or work with our kids back here? Would you give that money and be generous and not worry about it? Would you apply for that job? Would you quit that job? Would you ask that girl out? Maybe today we draw a line in the sand when it comes to fear. Instead of even asking the question, what would you do if I weren't afraid? Maybe today is the day you say things like, today's the day I will go out for that team. Today's the day I will sign up for that mission trip. Today's the day I will apply for that job. Today's the day I'll have that difficult conversation that I've been putting off because I'm afraid. Today's the day I'll apply for that job. Today's the day I'll ask that girl out. And if you ask the girl out and she says yes, and you end up getting married and end up having kids, you will name one of them Eric. Or Erica, whatever. What if today is the day that you said, God, you are bigger than my fears, and you gave them to him? What if today was the day that turned out to be that turning point where you got to see what is on the other side of your fears? Stand with me now. Let's pray. Band's going to do a couple songs for us before we leave today. God, we thank you for this day. We thank you that you're a God that does care about us, that we can cast all of our fears, all of our anxiety upon you. God, probably within each and every one of us, there's at least one area of our life that if we're honest, we realize that fear has been holding us back. God, I pray today that we'd be able to name that, give that to you, release it to you, God. That we'd seek to know you more, that we'd look to trust in you more, and that we wouldn't allow fear to hold us back anymore. That we would no longer be slaves to fear, but we'd be able to truly rest in who you say we are, which is your child, God. And because of that, the things that maybe we thought were impossible could be possible. The things that fear told us we can't do, you say we can. And so we just ask all these things in your name.